In 2020, life is garbage, right? We are in a pandemic. We done lost Kobe. We done lost Chadwick. We done lost Gigi. And then we still got this orange bastard in the office. So now it's just a matter of like, I just need a moment to escape. Let me escape to things were not perfect, but it was a little bit better.
Welcome to Dear Culture, the podcast that gives you news you can trust for the culture. I'm your co-host, Courtney Wills, Entertainment Director for The Griot.
I'm your co-host, Marielle Turner, Senior Editor for The Griot.
And I'm your co-host, Shauna Pinnock, Social Media Director for The Griot. And this week we're asking, Dear Culture, were the 1990s the golden age of Black sitcoms?
Before we get into the show, ladies, what's on your minds this week?
Well, quite frankly, I'm still thinking about some news that broke earlier this month, which was, you know, Cardi B had filed for divorce from her husband, rapper Offset of the Migos. And all I can say is, and this might get bleeped out later on, but what I recognize is that men do not love or even like women. Y'all just like fucking us. Like, it's just all there is, because the amount of people who love to, you know, try and think that it's a gotcha of, well, I guess that WAP didn't keep him and blah, 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 as if Cardi is not the one who filed for divorce from this man, as if Cardi is not the one who is actively choosing herself, as if Cardi is not the one saying, you know what, maybe this marriage thing isn't for me. So yeah. And special shout out to the pick me's. Did he pick you, sis? Did he pick you? Did he, you know, did you get the ring? Did you know, cooking and cleaning, is that keeping your man from cheating? Is that keeping your man from, oh, I don't know, just being trash just in general? Shut up, everybody. You know what? Let me stop. I got it. Go ahead. Court, what about you?
One thing on my mind might be equally controversial, and that is new film Antebellum. The film that stars Janelle Monáe and Gabori Sidibe, among others, is certainly powerful, but it's not without its problems. I think that it's definitely worth a watch. In fact, I think you should watch it twice. And that's because the way that the story flows really doesn't make sense until you get to the end. And once you do, you can kind of go back and pick up the breadcrumbs that the directors were laying the whole time that you were probably oblivious to because you were too busy trying to figure out what the hell was going on. We know that Janelle Monáe really struggled with this role because it was heavy. It was filmed on an actual plantation in New Orleans, and she was fighting mercury poisoning throughout shooting. So admittedly, her mental health and physical health was compromised throughout the whole project. And for that, she deserves a ton of applause. Still, I'm encouraging everyone to give it a chance, actually give it two chances, and allow yourself to get past some of the hangups that you might be experiencing because the filmmaking is a little messy, and really jump in and start these conversations with the people around you and with yourself on what activism, what being a hero, and what breaking free looks like for you now. That's the biggest takeaway that I got from the film, and I hope everyone gives it a chance because it's important. And, you know, either way, we love our girl Janelle Monáe, so let's show them some support.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I think has been on my mind recently is that we've seen several sports figures pay tribute to, you know, these fallen heroes that we've had in our community lately. So we want to give a major shout out to Naomi Osaka. She won the U.S. Open, and she actually said that she decided to wear the Kobe Bryant jersey after every match on her journey to winning the championship because it gave her strength. And following up with that, Paul Gasol actually honored Kobe, who was his teammate, by naming his firstborn daughter after Kobe's 13-year-old daughter, Gianna, who sadly passed away earlier this year. And then we've also recently seen Cam Newton pay tribute to Chadwick Boseman by giving the Wakanda salute after scoring his first touchdown as a Patriots player. So I think it's just, you know, it's really honorable to see some of our heroes that are still here paying homage to our heroes that have passed. So that really struck me in recent times.
This week, we're going to take a look back at some of the most iconic sitcoms in Black television history. Join us as we go Black in the Day.
So So one of my favorite shows, A Different World, has been credited by some for being one of the largest contributing factors to Black people enrolling into college in the 1990s. Was this life imitating art or art imitating life? What do you guys think?
Well, for me, I think it was in many ways art imitating life. I think over the course of the 90s, especially, you saw a big influx of Black people attending college. A lot of them are first generation. And so I think, I don't know, I've also heard people say they were motivated to attend college by watching A Different World. So maybe it was kind of a mixture of both. What do you think? What are your thoughts?
Was Hillman an HBCU? I distinctly remember looking for that when it was time for me to apply for colleges. And then now I can't quite decide if I remember it as being an HBCU or were we just looking at the students of color at a predominantly white institution?
No, it was definitely always an HBCU. So for those of us who followed all things like Cosby and, you know, like all of that back in the day. So, you know, you remember from a Cosby show, you would always see Heathcliff, because that's how I'm going to refer to him, Heathcliff wearing, you know, these various like sweatshirts from these different HBCUs, right? And then you always got the background story of Heathcliff and Claire, that they met each other while at Hillman. And it was an HBCU. It was also so like there was a whole thing of when Denise was picking what college that she was going to actually go to, and Grandpa Russell had to come in and basically explain to her, you know, why this is such a huge thing, and just even going beyond the whole idea of like, you know, just going to college and all the other stuff, and what is it that HBCUs can bring to you. As a graduate of an HBCU, shout out to Spelman, number one, you know, I can say like all of that stuff definitely resonated with me. I think as a kid watching A Different World just put so many things in perspective for me. One, it definitely let us know like white people can attend HBCUs. If you don't remember, you know, season one had that one lonely white girl, I believe her name was Maggie, you know, and that was always a complex character to me. I wasn't really that interested in her, but fine. And then, you know, you saw from after season one, when Denise, or rather Lisa Bonet, left the show, you know, and they started to focus more on Whitley and Dwayne. And it was just so amazing to see. I can say, honestly, I was inspired to go to college. I specifically chose Spelman College. My top three choices were all HBCUs. It was Spelman, Howard, and FAMU. I applied to many other different schools, but I was like, any of these three pick me, I'm going. You know, and just seeing like Black people congregating together, Black people learning, you know, Black people being smart and being applauded for being so friggin' smart, you know what I mean? And even seeing like all of these different, I'll say this, as a person who, when I was in high school and I was applying to HBCUs and being told by white guidance counselors and teachers that there was no diversity at an HBCU, you're just surrounded by other people. And then you watch shows like A Different World, and then you go to, you know, the Spelmans and Howards and Morehouses and et cetera of the world. And you're like, oh no, that's bullshit. Like I met Black Republicans, didn't know that was a thing. I met Black skaters. I met Black people from Alaska, didn't know that was a thing. I met rich Black people. I met from like the hood, you know what I mean? Where you're just like, how did you get here? You met people from the South. Like I met the Whitley Gilberts of the world. You know, and then you just had me from New York, but also trying to rep Jamaica and Guyana and try to figure out that awkward side of me. You know what I mean? I met kids who were dead broke and who were just trying to figure out how the hell to make it semester to semester. I met people like me who got in on a full scholarship. I met people whose parents were able to pay out of pocket. Crazy. You know, like it was, I'll say A Different World was such an accurate representation of what to expect from an HBCU. And it touched on so many different things, so many different topics. Like that was the first show to talk about HIV AIDS and condom use and rape. You know what I mean? Like these really heavy, hard-hitting topics that even now, I've been out of college, what, 11 years? And these are still things that are still relevant today. I will still sit here and watch A Different World back to back to back to back to back and be like, you know what? That's a damn shame. It happened in 88, still happening now. Like, you know, they addressed apartheid. Like, let me stop. I will go on and on about this show.
That is a really good point, Shauna. And Marielle, I noticed that one of your favorite shows was Sister Sister. And recently, Tia Mowry opened up about a popular teen magazine denying her and Tamara the cover because they were Black. Can you believe that type of discrimination was still happening in the 1990s?
I can definitely believe it because I think it still happens today in 2020. So it does not shock me at all that they were denied the cover in the 90s. I think it's very unfortunate because, as you mentioned, Sister Sister to me was the best sitcom to come out of that time. Growing up as a Black girl in Detroit, that show was just very inspiring to watch because, you know, the show is based in Detroit. They attend Detroit schools. They go on to attend the University of Michigan, which I also attended. So when I was young, you know, it just had a huge impact. And I think that putting them on the cover, it could have touched a lot of young Black girls, such as myself, and who were really big fans of the show. So it's really the teen magazine's loss, I think, because obviously Tia and Tamara are still doing very well today. And yeah, I'm not shocked at all that people were discriminating based off race in the 90s, not at all.
Yeah, same. It's sad that that's still very much so a thing, you know, probably not as obvious as it was in the 90s. I can only imagine, you know, white twin set, they had to take their place. But I can definitely say, like, for me, what I loved about Sister Sister was, it's so crazy. I was literally watching episodes on Netflix last night, you know, and it's just being able to sit and watch like the dichotomies between these two girls who are essentially strangers, you know, and seeing different things being tackled, like, you know, their white father and, you know, and the whole idea of like adoption. And it was a family that was made untraditionally. And I think that was what was so amazing about it, is seeing like, oh, so Black people, it doesn't have to be like a baby mama, baby daddy situation. It doesn't have to be a husband and wife. It could just be, yo, our daughters were separated at birth. We got to put them together and we'll figure out and we'll make it work. And, you know, you had people like the iconic Jack A. Harry. You had Ray, you know, who, if we talk about Moesha, we're going to talk about trash television fathers. But, you know, I think Ray was definitely a perfect example of like the opposite of that. So, yeah, I'm not surprised that that happened. It's sad to see. Actually, I'm kind of pissed off for them, if anything.
Well, you know, it's been well documented that Living Single inspired the sitcom Friends. And that's putting it mildly, honestly. Is it time for America to admit this fact and give Lee Bowers her flowers?
Listen, you already know my answer to that. Give them their things. Okay, it's rightfully deserved. Living Single is still iconic. It is perfection television. We're not going to talk about that last season because there was a lot of strange things. It jumped the shark. But, you know, oh, Max is pregnant with Kyle's baby all the way from when he's in London or China or wherever the hell he went. No, but, you know, it was a great show. And then you see shows that literally copied it. And it almost brings me back to, you know, like when Black artists would put out music and then here goes like Elvis Presley and the rest of the white rock and rollers stealing it. You know what I mean? It's nothing new, but it's trash to see.
Yeah, you know, it kind of felt like with Living Single, you love to see like these young Black people living their best life and dealing with dating and just navigating the world in a way that isn't necessarily based off of their race. And it kind of reminds me of the 90s version of Insecure in some ways, where, you know, it's just like, yes, we're Black, but we're also out here just trying to figure out, be good friends, deal with these men, you know, just navigating that space. And I think, like, of course, a Black show was at the forefront of that. And then a white show copied it and became this iconic, amazing show. I mean, it just, this is America. So that makes perfect sense to me. But it is beyond time to give Eva her flowers, definitely.
Can't have nothing. this is a show that's very near and dear to my heart, Martin, which, you know, was again, one of the most iconic films of the 1990s, regardless of like that really awkward last season, you know, where you saw Martin and Gina together all of like, what, twice? Because of that rift that was happening between Martin Lawrence and Tisha Campbell at the time. So I guess there's a few things. Will there ever be, like, will we ever see a Martin reboot? Number one, and number two, do we even want to?
You know what? I think we could, because the cast says they're down to do it. I don't know if we need it or if we even want to do it. I was really late to the Martin game because my parents wouldn't let me, when I was a kid in the 90s, they were very strict about what I could and could not watch. So I was late to that, but it's such an amazing show and it's hilarious and it still reads like it still fits today. Do we really need to reboot it? Like, not everything needs to be rebooted. Just leave it where it is. It's streaming. All these shows are streaming now. It's absolutely no point to revamp, in my opinion. What do you think?
Same. And for me, it's, again, Martin is one of my absolute favorite shows. I'm one of those really annoying people that if we're going to watch Martin together, I'm probably going to be like saying the words along with the characters, because I've seen these episodes, I'm not BSing you, like thousands of times. And I mean, like, just replay it on a loop. Like, I love that show. But the thing is, the things that we enjoyed in the 1990s aren't necessarily enjoyable now in 2020. You know, there's a lot of things that are cringeworthy, you know? There's a lot of things that's cringeworthy. There's a lot of things that I'm like, huh, I did not really take it to an assessment that, especially as a chocolate girl, like, huh, like Pam was being real, was being real disrespected. You know, I didn't take into account like, huh, there are times when Martin isn't just being like funny or whatever. Like Martin is garbage. Like Martin is trash. Martin is trash as a husband. Martin is trash as a friend. Martin is trash as a radio host. Like all of these really, these terrible things, like even for something like, hey, Almond Brown, you know, like, and just watching like certain homophobic things or transphobic things, and you're just like, ooh, damn, you know. But then there are moments that are like, you know, that ain't no damn puppy.
I think there's a puppy in our room.
Oh, that ain't no damn puppy. That ain't no damn.
That can't be recreated. I'm sorry. I don't want to see nobody else try to recreate that. I don't want to see Tisha Campbell, as much as I love her. Love Tisha Campbell, okay? Much as I love her, I don't want to see her on my screen singing about some things. Like, no, like, leave it alone. Martin has this dad bod. You know, I loved him in this latest Bad Boys movie. You know, loved him. And on top of that, when you really think about it, Tommy is dead. So, you know, if we're not going to be talking about Tommy not having a job, then what's the point? Like, and I don't want to see new actors try to emulate these classic characters that have been etched into our sitcom history. Like, it just doesn't make sense to me.
At their core, sitcoms are about relationships. From that infamous A Different World scene where Dwayne Wayne crashes Whitley's wedding to tell her they need to be together, to how Joan and her gal pals navigated their love lives on Girlfriends, we learned a lot from watching those shows. Looking back, you know, I definitely think those messages were healthy. And I also think that they kind of taught some of the wrong things to women about dating and men specifically. Referencing Whitley's wedding, I personally do not believe you should be at the point where you're marrying another man for the quote unquote love of your life to show up and tell you like, no, wait, I changed my mind. Like, I want to be with you.
Baby, please.
Right, baby, please, forget that guy. Like, and while when you're young, it's like, oh, that's romantic. Look at he's so passionate. But as you grow and get older and you go to therapy and you learn about relationships, that's not the man you should probably be dating. So, and then even with Girlfriends, which if you've ever watched that show, like the romantic ups and downs on that show are just next level. And I think, Shauna, it's so interesting what you said about a lot of the things that seemed okay or romantic or whatever about relationships in the 90s. In 2020, you can see like, ooh, this is some toxic behavior right here. So yeah, I think they were not the healthiest view of relationships. What about you?
I think 90s relationships and their portrayal were just like goofy as hell. And I'm talking about relationships between romantic relationships, friendships. You know, we're all in a frenzy earlier this year watching Issa and Molly on Insecure and just seeing the toxicity of their friendship, right? And how those things bubbled over. And then it's like, again, shout out to Netflix because I've been rewatching Girlfriends and just seeing that, like the crazy relationships between Joan and Tony. First off, when Tony is over here trying to sleep with Sean, I was like, see, that's when I would have to beat your behind. Because first off, you're the one who went and got the clap messing around with this doctor. And now you're mad at me because I let it slip because you didn't let me know that you were about to stay with this other man. You had a whole other ring on your finger. Crazy. One. Two, as much as I love my girls, as much as I love who I call my sisters, who I call my line sisters, my family, I'm sorry. Lynn would have had to get her broke ass out of my house long before, what was that, season three? She would have had to go. I'm sorry, what? Another degree? All these degrees, all this credit card debt, and you ain't got nothing to offer over here dressed like a hippie, dressed like Miss Frizzle from Magic School Bus? No, sis, get a job or get out. That's crazy. Then it's just the whole idea of, like, again, like I said, A Different World is one of my favorite shows. And Dwayne and Whitley's relationship, not goals. Really, really not goals. You know, and it was so crazy of how many times, especially it, like, that was tried to be framed that Whitley was just this high maintenance, you know, just extra chick. It was like, nah, Dwayne was on his BS too. Like, I'm sorry, you over here flirting with, what's his name? Malik McCall's mama from Love & Basketball. You over here flirting with her because, oh, y'all want to sit here and tell math jokes to each other. When you just proposed? Excuse me? No, no. 90s relationships, if you were to trash.
I agree. I mean, I've been rewatching Girlfriends thanks to they're now front and center on Netflix. And I was shocked by how early in season one, I now recognize that Tony is just a garbage friend. I mean, from jump, I think from episode one or two, I started realizing how toxic that relationship seems in retrospect. But at the time, I was just like, oh, this is how it's going to be when I grow up. Something that really struck me was Joan's relationship with herself. I mean, in season one, we see her really struggling with the fact that I think she's 29 and she just made junior partner at a law firm and she lives in this beautiful house, but she's, oh my God, not married. I think that that really dated the show because I don't see too many 29-year-old attorneys fretting about where their life is going. I think that the needle has really moved in terms of women pursuing their careers, pursuing home ownership, pursuing other factors in their lives into their 20s and well into their 30s. And now we're seeing women knocking on 40's door maybe start to fret about becoming a mother or finding a man. But it seems like that mindset of being overwhelmed with the desire to be married in your 20s is a little dated now.
Definitely.
One of the things that truly inspired us to do this episode was the addition of so many iconic Black shows from the 90s and 2000s hitting streaming services like Netflix. They gave us Moesha, they're giving us Girlfriends, and now HBO Max is giving us a Fresh Prince reunion that will feature both Aunt Viv's, and Peacock just greenlit 2 seasons of the reboot, which sounds really interesting. It's going to be executive produced by Will Smith, and it's going to be a kind of more current, up-to-date example of the storyline of Fresh Prince, but it's going to be set in modern day, and it's going to be a drama versus a comedy. So I'm so excited to see what they do with that and how they really dig deep into some of the more serious scenarios they explored in the comedy now that they don't have to be funny in the 1990s with it. What do you think inspired this resurgence of Black 90s sitcoms?
I think people are bored. I honestly do. I think people are bored. I think there is an astounding lack of creativity when it comes to a lot of things. And when that happens, you kind of fall back on the old faithful, old reliable. It's kind of crazy. It's funny. Like, as I've gotten older, the more I've decided to watch old stuff. Like, there's so much content, so much new content now, but I'm just like, sometimes I'm just like, man, let me just get some nostalgia going and enjoy this Living Single, you know, marathon that I'm about to have in my house, this Cosby Show marathon, this A Different World marathon, this Martin marathon, you know, and I don't know, just kind of, especially now, low-key, this might be Trump's fault, because when you really think about it, when you take a moment, you're like, wait a minute, right now, life sucks, okay? For the last 4 years, life has sucked. In 2020, life is garbage, right? We are in a pandemic. We done lost Kobe. We done lost Chadwick. We done lost Gigi. And then we still got this orange bastard in the office. So now it's just a matter of, like, I just need a moment to escape. Let me escape to things were not perfect, but it was a little bit better. So let me go ahead and enjoy all of this 90s Black glory. Thank you, UPN, for doing the Lord's work, okay, at a time when it needed to be done. So yeah, those are my thoughts. What about you, Marielle?
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. I think it is almost 100% escapism and us trying to like go back to a simpler time. And, you know, for a lot of us who are watching this, we were like teens or young kids and, you know, life was simple. You just wake up, go to school, do your homework. As you mentioned, no Trump, no pandemic, or even just, you know, the responsibilities of being a full grown adult, no bills. You can just kind of like tune out. And so I think to watch that now, living in what we're living in now and being full grown adults, it's just nice to get away and, you know, just check out, take yourself back to when you were a little more free and had less stressing things going on. So yeah, I think that's kind of the influx of 90s sitcoms. Ladies, what are your top three Black sitcoms of the 90s and why? Court, you start.
Oh my gosh, this is such a hard question. And I feel like I need a top 10 list. But if I had to pick, I'm going to go by like pure joy and impact. So Fresh Prince. Fresh Prince was huge for me and for my family. Oddly enough, we actually had a nephew, my cousin, my mom's nephew, living with us because he got jumped on his way home from school in Compton. And his mom was like, that's enough. And so when I saw Fresh Prince, it was actually very much modeling what was happening in my real house. Now, we didn't go to prep school and we weren't multimillionaires, but we were certainly in a more affluent community in a big house. And it was a fish out of water situation for my cousin. So in a way, Fresh Prince really kind of helped me navigate some of the things that I was struggling with in my own house. And I just loved it. I thought Hillary was so fun and cool and beautiful. And I thought that Ashley, you know, was just so sweet. And watching her kind of grow up with me gave me someone who I could relate to on the screen. So Fresh Prince, I think, is hands down my number one. Second one for me is Hello in the House. When is that coming back? LL Cool J with the one short pant leg doing upside down sit-ups on my small screen just made my little adolescent heart pitter patter. And so that was so cool to see my crush get his own show that I could tune into every week. And I'd say the last one was probably Family Matters because I absolutely just loved the dynamic of the family. I loved seeing a Black family. And I, oddly enough, I loved that it was so popular that my little white friends were watching it. It made me feel like it wasn't so othered. And I think the success of, you know, the Steve Urkel character, I mean, if you can remember that far back, he was really, really popular. He was doing commercials. People were talking about him every week. And it just kind of helped make the white people that I was around comfortable with a Black family on TV. And I will tell you that that show was one of the first times that I realized what racism could look like in my own life. I was sitting on the bus and I was talking to my then friend who very casually just recollected how she got in trouble last night for watching Black shows. And I was like, what? And she's like, you know, like I'm not allowed to watch Black shows like Urkel and stuff. And she said it so nonchalantly. And I was so taken aback that that could possibly be a thing in someone's house. Don't watch Black shows. And that Family Matters was somehow banned from her house really was a big like slap in the face for me that I will never forget.
So I'll go next. I already talked about A Different World and its perfection. And like I said, it inspired me to go to Spelman, inspired me to pledge Delta. Then Knock Down the Door episode, you know, although I'm pretty sure they were AKs, but that's another story. But, you know, that was just amazing. And also just seeing like a real free militant Black girl in Freddie Wilkes. You gotta shout out Freddie. Just a perfect show, a perfect show. After that would definitely be Living Single. Already talked about that, but real talk. Shout out to Erica Alexander, Maxine Shaw, attorney at law, Ride the Maverick. She's what inspired me to, you know, go to law school. And then I'd say the third one is kind of a toss up, right? And it's really just for moments. So it's a little bit between Family Matters and really because kind of what Courtney touched on in terms of racism. And we saw like, you know, that episode where that one fellow officer was over here haranguing Eddie, you know, and then you had Carl over here had to check that man. But then there was like that weird stalker vibe from Urkel. So So as much as I love this show, that kind of turned me off, but I'll definitely say Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, literally for dark skin, Aunt Viv gave me everything, gave me life to see this beautiful dark skinned Black woman. My favorite, absolute favorite moment of her is that dance ballet little situation that she had, and she had to go snap at that white woman. Don't play with Black women. Give them their things. So yes, those are my top three.
I love that. Okay, so for me, as I mentioned, my number one is Sister Sister. You know, as I said, growing up in Detroit and seeing these like beautiful, smart Black teens on TV that I could emulate, they inspired me in many ways to go to the University of Michigan. And also, let's shout out Lisa Landry, who now that I'm rewatching, really is like the strongest part of that show. She is hilarious. So I live for Sister Sister. Number two for me would be The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. And I think I really related to, I went to a lot of predominantly white schools growing up, and I liked the way that the show dealt with race in white spaces and being, you know, the only Black person or the token, and how do you figure that out? So I think I really loved it for that. And then as you mentioned, dark skin Aunt Viv, she was everything. And then for number three, I'm going to give it to A Different World, only because, you know, it's so such an inspiring show to get people motivated to attend college. And it just shows how much fun you can have. It clues you into pledging. You know, I just loved every minute of that show. So those are definitely the top three for me.
Ladies, this was amazing. What a fun way to look back at some of the shows that may have shaped our lives. A special thanks to you, Marielle, for helping us look back at some of the most iconic Black sitcoms of all time. We want to remind our listeners to support your local Black businesses and donate to your local organizations and religious institutions. The business that we will highlight this week is Perfectly Hued. Perfectly Hued is here to set a new standard for the greeting card industry by providing the options to explore the individual hues of us all. The Griot has published a list of 50 Black businesses to support during the coronavirus pandemic. If you'd like your business to be featured, email us at info@thegriot.com. That's GRIO.com.
Thank you for listening to Dear Culture. If you liked what you heard, please give us a 5-star review and subscribe to the show wherever you listen to your podcast and share it with everyone you know.
Please email all questions, suggestions, and compliments to podcasts@thegriot.com. The Dear Culture podcast is brought to you by The Griot and executive produced by Blue Talusma and co-produced by Kyrie Williams, Sundis Hassan, and Kevin Y. Brown.